The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
...841-1360-97.5 WTAQ News, Talk, Sports. So I gotta tell ya, if you are listening to WTAQ, and probably some other radio stations, but we get a lot of it. TV gets a lot of it. Yeah, the vacation's over. Wasn't 2013 nice? Pretty much no elections in Wisconsin. Well, just think, it's easy to forget what we went through. 2010 was an election year. Then 2011, all hell broke loose, and the whole thing started. And then the recalls, I get all confused here. It was 2011 were the Senate recalls, right? 2012 was a gubernatorial recall. Yeah, we had been in a perpetual, easy for me not to say, perpetual, all the time. That's what I mean. I mean all the time. We were in a perpetual election cycle from 2010 through 2012, all the way through to the fall elections. And then we got a break. 2013 was quiet. No campaign ads. No nothing. And now in these closing days of the primary race, where you've got some hotly contested assembly races, this is interesting. Whoever would have thought, in fact, it'd be interesting to research, that a Brown County clerk of courts race would generate the campaign ads that you're hearing on the radio. In large part because you've got a couple of candidates with the resources to do it, and two, because two of the candidates, the one that's considered the preferred candidate by the legal community, Donna Mason, signed the recalls against Scott Walker and Rob Coles. Whoever would have thought that otherwise sleepy little county race would have generated that kind of attention? And now she's firing back and on and on. This county elected office that most people never even think about, suddenly generating all this advertising spending on the radio. That might be a harbinger of what's coming this fall. We also expect, obviously, that you're going to see, once the governor's race starts in earnest, you think you've seen advertising on that front now. Just wait. Just wait. By the way, I think it's been a good week for Mary Burke. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I think it's been a good week for Mary Burke. And we're going to talk about that later in the show. But be careful with the governor's race. I'm going to spend much more time on that than I have thus far. And I realize it's still early, but I think we're at a turning point. Something else interesting in politics that I want to get to today. Many of you know that I write for the conservative website Right Wisconsin. That website is a journal communications product, and it's basically the web platform for fellow talk show host and friend Charlie Sykes. Charlie did something today on Right Wisconsin. Charlie lives in the 6th Congressional District. I do not. I live in the 8th. Charlie wrote a piece today saying who he's going to vote for in the 6th Congressional District. And I want to comment on his choice, one, on the decision to do that, I don't have a vote in that race, and I'm not going to express a preference. Here's what I have said. I think Glenn Grothman has run the most impressive campaign. I think he's looked the best in the debates. And contrary to what Dewey Strobel says, I think Glenn Grothman would be the most anti-Peach Rye of the three candidates because he's never afraid to speak his mind. But he's been relatively quiet on that front during the campaign. He hasn't had those Glenn Grothman moments. I will also tell you, I think there's a really good chance Glenn is going to win. We'll get to all of that later in the show. What else? There's something rather significant that I wanted to touch on. Of course we're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about Iraq and the way what's going on is being reported. And that nobody in the mainstream media is going to tell you that having to possibly return to U.S. airstrikes in Iraq was entirely avoidable. Of course, the president insists you'll never see additional boots on the ground again in Iraq. It's a rather busy news day. But I want to start. I'm not going to start with talking about local elections. Not really going to start talking about anything, any particular issue, although a feature listeners have come to love that Jason is producing. We'll have one of those. That would be a big empty day count. Jason and our creative voice guy, Victor Lyle, have been having some fun with that. By the way, I'm getting a lot of feedback on those, Jason. All positive. They're fun. The big empty update is coming before 9 o'clock, so don't go anywhere. It's day 23 today, right? Day 23 of the big empty because there's no Walmart there. But I want to start with a couple of things that are actually, I think, very, very interesting stories. The local paper isn't really the local paper anymore. You know that, right? The print edition of the local paper is the USA Today with a local section tucked in front of it and a sports section tucked behind it. And much of the sports section is even often USA Today material. They've got their local, you know, the Packers or whatever. It's not intended as a shot. It's just it is what it is. On 5B, which is just the USA Today tucked inside, is really what Gannett's doing right now. Is they're just, you're getting a subscription to USA Today, pretty much whatever Gannett paper you subscribe to, and then they do a little local wraparound, which gets leaner and leaner all the time. Let's do, okay, rather than do the one that can make you paranoid about your house, I'll do that one second. I'll do this one first. For some, recession isn't really over. This is news to the folks at USA Today. For some, yeah, you know who? Americans. For Americans, the recession isn't over. I'll be honest. There's no value judgment attached to this. I came through the recession okay. I didn't lose my job. I didn't get a reduction in pay. I probably saw my income limited more than it would have otherwise been. But I've come through unscathed. But I still feel that the economy is stagnant. And it has, you know, I'm paying more for things. My overall income hasn't risen that much. But I'm not going to complain compared to others. That's really the crux of this story. The recession's icy touch still felt by millions. A new Federal Reserve Board survey finds the Fed's report on the economic well-being of U.S. households show that many households, and this is 2013 data, were faring well, but a large number hadn't recovered from the recession, which officially lasted from December 2007 to June 2009 and was the harshest downturn since the Great Depression. Among the findings, 60% said their families were either doing okay or living comfortably financially, but a quarter said they were just getting by financially, and 13% said they were struggling. 34% said they were somewhat worse off or much worse off. 34%, a third. Another 34% reported they were about the same as they were in 08, which I guess is about where I would put me. Education debt of some kind was held by a quarter of the population. The average amount of that debt, $24,750. 57% of those who had savings before the recession used up some or all of it during the recession or afterward. 39% have a rainy day fund adequate to cover 3 months of expenses. 48% could cover a $400 emergency expense without selling something or borrowing money. This is the problem for Democrats nationally. And this is the problem as they try to pin this to Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Then the question is why? Why can't the economy find its sea legs? I'm not surprised at all to learn that this is the situation that many find themselves in. I still think the uncertainty of Obamacare is a big part of it. And many of the jobs being created are actually part-time jobs. Many of them in the fast food sector, which, by the way, is why they're pushing so hard for that $15 minimum wage. They know that, you know. They get that. I'm not at all surprised to learn that a term that was coined during the Carter administration is alive and well in America. Malaise. Malaise has set in. And it has. That, as much as anything, is why Democrats are in big trouble, and I think they are going to lose the Senate. Then there's the paranoid story. The day is fast approaching when your thermostat, washer, even the light bulbs in your lamps will contain embedded computers so they can talk to you and you to them. Having your fridge order more milk when supplies get low, your house cool before you get home, and your light bulbs tell you just before they need replacing might be nice. And doesn't that sound like that futuristic home that you would see in those YouTube videos from the 1950s? You ever watch one of those? The Kitchen of Tomorrow. By the way, in the Kitchen of Tomorrow, the wife was still wearing a dress and a pearl necklace. So they were off just a scotch by that. But actually, some of the stuff, it has kind of come to pass. But this is really that future house that can do everything. So what's to be concerned about? It can all be hacked. Security experts say these connections called the Internet of Things, really? That's the best they could do? That's the most creative name they have for that, huh? The Internet of Things carry with them the potential for catastrophe. And you can't take anything lightly after the massive hack the New York Times reported this week. By the way, have you changed all your passwords yet? I haven't. You're nuts if you haven't, and I haven't, and I need to change all of them and the usernames. At Black Hat, an annual conference of hackers and computer security experts taking place in Vegas this week, almost every panel seemed to contain some reference to this coming wave of connected devices and their dangers. In about a minute to an hour, I can reliably unlock the door on a car, said Silvio Cesare, an Australian researcher for security firm Qualys. He presented his findings Thursday. This is no idle concern. On Wednesday, the National Insurance Crime Bureau reported that thieves are using high-tech electronic devices to break keyless entry systems that lock modern cars. Oh, I forgot. You should have yelled at me earlier. Yeah, you can. You can do that. Yeah, no. Okay, we're out of time. Okay, now Jason says, never mind, we're good. Because I made an executive decision. Anyway, but I'll wrap up here so we can do this. Television, webcam, stove, thermostat, sprinkler, controller can all be hacked. Now you can sleep better at night. All right, I almost forgot. We cannot let this half hour pass without the Big Empty Update, day 23.
It's time for the Big Empty Update.
Day 23. Time to play. Why is nothing better than Walmart? What to do with the Green Larson property? Mayor Schmidt idea number 609. Green Bay's first kite stadium. Not only do you have to worry about your kite getting ripped apart, but your feet as well, with all the nails and glass and stuff. But that's okay. Everyone has Obamacare. Is that a that is a dandelion. Okay, great. That was another edition of Why Is Nothing Better Than Walmart? Ask the mayor.
Yes, indeed. Ask the mayor. And we heard about, oh yeah, but no, I've got a couple coming to look at it this afternoon. That's what we heard from the mayor. All right, much to get to after 9 o'clock. As I mentioned, we'll talk about the governor's race. We'll talk about what's going on in Iraq. Hey, one other thing from the USA Today Green Bay, which is, that might be my new name for the local paper. The USA Today Green Bay, because that's mostly what it is. Netflix used to, that started as a streaming, actually I think it started where you got them in the mail. That's how it started. And then it was streaming movies. Now it's all their original series. The top 10 streamed programs on Netflix: House of Cards, Breaking Bad, Dexter, The Walking Dead, Orange is the New Black, Family Guy, American Horror Story, Parks and Recreation, Sons of Anarchy, and How I Met Your Mother. So I must be the only guy watching old Mission Impossible episodes on there. It's 8:58.
Of illegal immigrants crossing